Hello, we're online, we're live, center stage. What do you mean, not quite?
Yeah, we're online.
Bonus. What's bonus mean? It means extra, right?
Extra, yeah.
Ah, okay. Aha, okay. Well, here we are, once again, gathered together. With Mark having a slight code in the bows. Where should we start? What do you want tonight?
Stock market.
Stock market. Well, we're up 34 points today. After having gone down in the past 2 weeks, approximately 250 points.
That's a sort of rebound.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily.
It's a slight increase after a big decline, basically.
No, it's not an increase, it's a recovery.
Okay.
An increase suggests that it made back the 250 points it lost and then added 34 more, which is not the case.
Okay, yeah.
So, what can we draw from this little bit of information that it has lost close to 220 points?
Instead of a sharp drop.
Mm-hmm. So that's why we're using the formula. Okay.
That's what I mean, points.
We're at 28, I believe. Anytime it's over 25 points or under, it's a half a point. What we can deduce from this current decline is that things are happening not exactly as we predicted, which is good. I don't like being right all the time. In fact, I don't like being right on these matters at all half the time. But the fact remains that there is a decline. Now, after the boom of the first week and a half of the re-election of the president, things looked real rosy and good. It climbed basically 300 points in that first week and a half. Now, it's doing a course correction and has dropped 220 points, which means that we have 80 more points to drop before it's back to what it was prior to the election.
Now, didn't Greenspan's announcement make a difference in this?
Oh, yes, it did. It did most certainly. And it shows how tenuous the stock market really is. The fact that your US stock market reacted to somebody's words in such a negative and violent way of 158 points is of much concern to me.
Now, yeah, but I mean, it's nothing that's new. I mean, you're not talking about anything that's new. I mean, this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, but somebody that is supposed to be financially astute and goes along and says something like that, knowing full well of the ramifications, shows that he is not the ideal person to keep A, his mouth shut, and B, to be in charge of the Federal Reserve, due to the fact that he can't keep his mouth shut. And the possibility percolates through the market that maybe he's not the most competent person to be in charge of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, but I don't make that decision. No. They have nothing to do with that.
No, but what I'm saying is that these things that happen for a reason, and the reason is that people in the stock market are becoming aware of the fact that these people that are in charge aren't in charge. And when they're given that little bit of freedom by their masters, they tend to make silly comments and rash mistakes. And the question is, who is in charge? And the stock market at the moment is wondering who is really in charge of the Federal Reserve.
Greenspan.
He is a figurehead, as we've covered before about the secret governments. They are the people really in charge. He's not in charge. He is the figurehead. It is like, who is in charge of Heavenly?
Mark Cracker.
I guess probably he is, really. Or who is in charge of Great Britain? Who is the leader of Great Britain?
Well, supposed to be the Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm. but the actual person who is in charge of the government, regardless of whether it is John Major or what's his name, Blair, is Queen Elizabeth. But she's not. She is a figurehead. She is in charge of nothing. She does what the government tells her to do. Who is in charge of the Japanese country?
It's not. The minister is supposed to be.
That's right. But the emperor, it's his government. You see. Now, the thing here is who is in charge of your government? Exactly. So anybody in his cabinet, right, is therefore a figurehead. So anybody in charge of any department, such as the Federal Reserve, is basically a figurehead. As we have stated before in the past, the people that actually run the government are the people that are civil servants, that have worked there their whole entire life. They are the ones that serve their masters, as they call them. But they are not their masters. They are the masters of the masters, even though they're the servants of the masters. So you see what I'm saying? So these servants give their masters a little bit of leeway to have a little bit of free will. And they go along and say something along the lines of what I've said. And in turn, what happens is that these individuals say these things, and confidence is lost in them, their government, and their political setup, and the market does a runner. Now, the question I have, and maybe I can extrapolate from this, is what if Greenspan read from his speech what was prepared for him to say, and those in the government that are the servants of their masters, deliberately set him up to say these things so that they could make a quick profit on what was said.
Yeah, I imagine that's possible, but it's speculation
at best. I'd say that's quite likely. Think about it. Right, certain stocks are going great guns. You cause a panic, right, and they sell off approximately 200 points. Now you get out your money, and you've been a civil servant, and you're in your, let's say, 40s and 50s, right, and you're thinking about retirement. What do? You get your master to say something that's going to depress the price of the market. Takes a nosedive at a particular point. You invest, put in all your life savings, as it were, and then you set your master up to say something that is going to really get the market roller coasting upwards or skyrocketing upwards.
Aren't you kind of using master in a contradictory term?
Yes, I am. I'm glad you spotted that. You see, they are supposedly the guys in charge, but they're not. In this connotation, the term master, I'm using it more as a puppet, a figurehead. You see, these political civil servants use their masters. They use them very well and very effectively. So you see, they're not really in charge. So ergo, it doesn't matter who is in charge. In fact, it would have been less beneficial if Dole had been elected. Now, here's something that you guys might not be aware of. Yesterday, was the day that the electoral colleges voted. The election was not decided on November the 5th. The popular votes were cast, but not the electoral colleges. Now, supposing the electoral colleges decided to vote for Bob Dole, who would be president? No.
You mean after the fact they could reverse it?
I saw Dole on the talk show last night, and he is not the man to be the figurehead of this country.
No, exactly. That is the reason why.
That's why he didn't get elected.
Is because he would not be the.
He's
a leader, a doer.
Yeah, but he's not in good shape.
When he is talking, he has a hard time because he's very self-conscious of his disability. So he comes off as somebody that is not very astute politically.
So
but au contraire.
How would someone that has a hard time dealing with a large amount of people be the leader of 300 million Americans? I mean, you know what I mean? It's kind of dickery.
Well, he doesn't see all 300 million of you. He does not have to deal with no more than maybe 1,000 people at a time. That he struggles with, but he could carry it off. When he is at a large rally or at a meeting where there is, you know, maybe 20, 30,000 people, the sheer numbers intimidate you. How would you handle being on stage in front of 30,000 people? Either of you.
Well, if I knew what I was doing and was prepared, I could do it. Only I couldn't wing it, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's something you'd want to be prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fabulous thing is prepared for every one of those things.
Yeah, but it still doesn't overcome the biggest fear of people on your planet is speaking in front of large numbers. That doesn't overcome it. You can be prepared. You can sit there and go through your speech over and over again, but you cannot still be prepared to deal with 30,000 people or 20,000 or 10,000.
The debates were really kind of crucial in that respect.
Well, the debate
just looks so much better.
Well, the camera spent so much time on him anyway. And the questions.
Yeah, but at any rate, I mean, this discussion's mute because President Clinton is leader of this country. Dole is nothing right now.
Okay? Mm-hmm. He's a private citizen.
He's going to write a book. He's a private citizen.
Yeah, but
he doesn't have anything to do with our government right now.
Don't underestimate that. He may be out of the government, but somebody that had that much power is never outside the government, if you know what I mean.
Okay, yeah.
So, what can we deduce, without prodding you too much, about the current economic situation?
It's artificially being simulated.
Mm-hmm. And also, it's teetering. Which way is it going to go? I don't know. I can't say which way it's going to go. Everything points to another increase.
Yeah, that's what I would guess, that it's going to go up before it goes down again.
Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. If it climbs up, it has been artificially inflated again. You remember before the election, we talked about it being artificially stimulated? This is a prime example.
Well, isn't how controlled is the stock market?
Very controlled.
So how can we see the huge decline that we predict? I mean, that would suggest a complete
breakdown. That would suggest a complete breakdown in the control system.
I can see it happening, but I'm sure you say it will.
Put it this way. You put your hands around somebody's neck, you tighten. Right? They are in your control. As long as you keep the grip just tight enough to stop them from being strangled. Now, if you relax your fingers, what's going to happen?
I'm going to start breathing.
Well, they're going to struggle as well to get away from you.
Right.
If you increase the tightness, what happens?
Strangle them,
and they will struggle for their life. So from this little analogy, right, the handlers and the servants are doing this to the market and their masters. All they need to do is relax just for a day or 2 days, or increase their grip for 1 or 2 days, and all hell will break loose for those 2 days, which will mean that the market will be totally out of their control. And in doing so, things will happen. Now, looking outside your country, Japan, Nikkei average has dropped close to about 300 points in the last month. The the Financial Times Index has dropped close to 200 points in the past 3 weeks. The German stock market has dropped about 150. Remember what I said when we started looking at the market back in the summer? And you're at the end of the line. Now is the time to watch the other stock markets around the world.
So we should keep an eye on the other stock markets.
Okay. The three main ones are the Financial Times Index, the Nikkei Average, and the German stock. I don't know what that one's called. You can pick up other ones, like maybe the French stock market, the Australian, and maybe, let's say, there's nowhere really else, the Russian stock market. The Russian stock market is a very interesting phenomena because it's new. That stock market will take some wild ups and downs and mean absolutely nothing except for real wild downs. Okay, let's move along. Okay, as I'm ring mistress, this is the way we're going to do it tonight. Okay, we'll do side one for Johnny, with Johnny being here. Okay, and then Johnny will get ready for work and everything. And then we'll do side two, and we'll do Kiri and mine's translations. How does that sound, Ross? Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Bless you.
Awesome.
Bless Mark's body or whatever.
Yes, it's...
Okay, greetings and felicitations. Let us proceed.
Greetings.
Okay, let us look at the questions that you have.
Okay. Question on mythology. Back in our elder days, when mythology and the telling of stories was important for teaching and passing on of lessons. We've kind of gotten out of that tradition now to where you rely more upon television and news reports to get our stories and lessons from. And, you know, we've kind of, with that loss, we've kind of lost our spiritual mysticism, let's say.
Yes and no. But continue.
Okay. What I'm wondering now is, are we returning to that original point then? We're coming full circle?
That is why I said yes and no. Let us look at major historical events. Okay. How do you know that the Battle of Gallipoli really happened?
For the people who were there.
Mm-hmm. Let us move forward in time 100 years.
Okay.
This is 2096. How do you know that Gallipoli really happened?
Books written by people who were there.
Okay, let us move 1,000 years into the future. This is 2996. How do you know Gallipoli really happened?
There might be some historical major event in our life, for all they know.
No, that is not answering the question. How do you know that it happened?
I can't think of what the world would be like in 1,000 years.
Okay, now let us look back close to 3,000 years. How do you know the siege of Troy really happened?
Stories from Plato and the fact that we found the ruins of it.
Mm-hmm. Are you sure that those are the ruins?
What a shimmelman they are.
According to one person. Okay, let us move forward in time 1,000 years again.
Okay.
How do you know that the Battle of Gallipoli really happened?
I don't know. You don't know for sure that it really happened. You know, if you weren't actually there at the time of it, I mean, you've got to, you know, look to your history books and I mean, you know, we assume this information is correct.
Well, there is one other way, but it's not something I think will be used, but could be, would be a better study of past lives.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, past lives of people who are actually there, know the names, say, oh, well, this is Gallipoli and this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, people on Hades base could tell you, you know, about a battle on Sirius because they're able to go back
and access that past life.
And access past lives of that battle that were actually there and have eyewitness accounts. That's the only way I can think of it.
Okay. So, you take a mythological event like the Siege of Troy and you compare it to the Battle of Gallipoli. What do you come up with? One is a myth and one is fact. 1,000 years into the future, both are myths. But you know now that one was found, most certainly by individuals that are still alive in your time.
Right.
So, what does that imply about myths and storytelling?
That basically, are always going to be there, but also they teach history.
Correct. The story of the Siege of Troy is a history lesson, a memory of a memory of a memory. The Siege of the Battle of Gallipoli is a memory.
Did the Siege of Troy actually happen?
That is besides the point.
Okay.
The point is that you are living in a time of myths and legends and stories due to the fact that what is happening now
in 1,000 years' time may be a story, a myth, or a legend. So do not say that you have moved out of the time of myths and legends. The fact that you have this communication device is besides the point. You are enhancing and spreading storytelling on a much wider scale than you could ever do from the bard sitting in the market square telling the story of two lovers that decided to die because they could not marry. The storyteller that sits in the marketplace now sits in the corner of the room and can talk to you from any place on your planet or off your planet. So, what has happened to the storyteller?
He's evolved just as we are.
He has evolved into a massive electronical component.
But if we lose that,
how can you lose it?
Well, let's say we don't have electricity. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no access to that electronic storyteller. Then we go back to just bare-brained what we remember from our stories that were, to us, facts.
Correct. So the storyteller has taken on more than one form. More than the gentleman sitting in the marketplace telling stories. You are both the storytellers. The storytellers of your lives. Johnny,
yes.
You have a question.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the Evers.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept, you know, just fascinates me. But I'm not sure what I want to ask. But, Russ, you got something?
I'm going to go. Go ahead. If you want to continue that line of thought, help yourself. Otherwise, I'll enhance on it if you want.
Okay.
On the story of Divas, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing some research into some of the various entities who have existed throughout our lives as myths and storytellings,
mm-hmm.
of the gods and goddesses, various deities, and the different sects and religions.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, through each basic civilization or community, you find similarities between all of them.
Yes.
As they go along. But is this merely because of the fact that they represent a common theme, or the fact that the Divas take care on the characteristics of each of the various places that they visit and pass those on?
It is more along the lines of the Divas using existing stories, myths, and legends to achieve what they want.
Hmm.
If you look at some of your stories, there are talks of appeasing the gods.
Mm-hmm.
So the Divas behave in a particular way to get what they want. Whether it is an area that nobody goes into, that is their domain. For example, the top of Mount Olympus. An area where they can live in peace and harmony and away from outside influences. Or if it is being brought gifts and having things planted and grown to appease them, or a building built so that they may dwell for a time in that place, in a happy, relaxed state.
Now, the Indian or Hindu religion,
mm-hmm.
has probably some of the most colorful deities or divas on the planet as far as their breadth of fullness that has been developed among them. And from that, I'm reminded of the ancient stories of UFOs and alien encounters in India way back before our written history ever began. I'm wondering how close these two are related.
Yes, they are quite related. You have to remember that the Devas were one of the seven races.
Correct.
And the interaction or interaction between the Devas and the people of that area is something that has been going on for a long, long time.
Now, the Devas of India basically confined to that area?
No.
Or they're worldwide?
They're worldwide. Some may inhabit an area for 1,000 years or 2,000 years because they are comfortable there. Others may wander around from place to place and cannot be held in one place for any length of time.
Okay, well,
others may go as the wind blows.
All right, well, how would we...
Thank you.
My pleasure. Go about determining which divas have to be hanging around in our area? Indian divas or Greek or... Nordic assailants, for example.
It depends on the individual. Some people can call divas. Others feel their presence. It is... One diva can have many aspects. There is a group of divas that, for example, are descended from one diva. From the bacterial process, the way the divas spread and continued, the fact that they split in half.
Right.
So that a diva may have many parts to it and be many different individuals, but it remembers that it was one once.
Okay. This reminds me of a time where I ran a ceremony solo in which I was summoning a particularly beneficial entity, and a big noise banged on my window all of a sudden with nothing outside to show any physical presence.
Mm-hmm.
Scared the living shit out of me. But I mean, this is something that you, when we talked about last week, he was taking on a more physical form. Would
yes,
this
I
be
did.
A sample of that?
Yes. Oh. You have to remember that they inhabit an area between your world in another space, and they will switch between that from time to time. At certain times, they are more powerful and more physical than at other times. It is not the same for each diva. It is like a wave. Sometimes they are very strong and present, and other times they are very weak and hard to perceive.
This is the reason for ceremonies being held at particular times of the moon or seasons.
For some, yes. For others, it does not matter.
Huh.
But for the people that worship the divas, it is handy to have a time that the divas will be remembered and the divas become aware of that time and will act upon that time.
An example that it's reminded me of Mark working with Diana and Hearn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we know the divas of that particular ilk happen to be in this particular area. Now, for other divas, you would be merely calling upon entities that you feel close to, and their ability to respond to that would demonstrate the fact that they are in this area, correct?
Correct. But let us look at the divas that Marg works with.
Okay.
What type of divas are they?
Hunter and Earth divas.
Correct. What was in this area before your species, your race?
Native Americans.
That did what?
Hunted and dealt a lot with the Earth.
Correct. So it would be logical that they would be present in the area. It is possible that they are of that family, as it were, that line and kind of beavers that in Europe are associated with the earth and hunting. Quite logical if you think about it. So it would be logical that an area where there was hunting and worshipping of the air, that there would be beavers in that area of that kind.
So what about in like big cities? What kind of beavers would you expect there? Probably none.
Yes and no. It depends on the environments created. More playful and mischievous beavers, I should imagine.
So I'm trying to remember my history of mythological origins and trying to decide which other demons of that same brand are in other cultures. For example, Nordic. I can't remember any hunting deities in the Nordic culture.
What about Thor, the god of thunder? He enjoyed hunting.
Well, see, this is why I'm asking. I'm not really familiar up on Thor. And on the female side of that?
Fricka. Freya. Freya was more of the ground, the trees.
That's true.
Freya was the mother goddess of the earth.
Well, as much Wagner gets played around her, I suppose they might be thinking around.
It would not surprise me. In fact, he has pointed out a time where Mark was being very foolish, wearing a cloak and shoving his sword into the air in a thunderstorm and shouting, "Go ahead, do your worst."
Good call. All right. Lightning rod in his hand.
I tempt thee. Okay.
But what does that tell you?
That there is a strong influence in that area for them and him.
And what that tells me is Mark's got brain damage.
Actually, Mark was being very smart and clever. Here is a piece of information that you may not be aware of. Water and electricity do not mix, correct?
I disagree. They connect quite nicely, actually.
Yeah.
They conduct.
Water is a good conductor.
Yes, they do conduct, but they do not mix. In a thunderstorm, you will have lightning and rain, correct?
Right.
Lightning takes place around the edges of the storm, correct?
Mm-hmm.
When it is raining, you are more deeply into the storm, correct?
Yeah.
So, with Mark thrusting his sword into a downpour of rain, whilst there is thunder and lightning going on, Brown tells you what?
He's fairly safe.
Correct. And it would not surprise me if Mark knew exactly what he was doing.
Well, I can still remember incidences at golf courses in the middle of a rainstorm, people huddled under trees, and they just got nailed by lightning hard.
Yes, but they would be at the edges of the storm. For example, there is a golfer that got struck by lightning. I believe his name is Savi Ballesteros.
Did he hit by lightning? I guess he did, yeah.
Yeah. And he said that he saw the storm clouds coming. He heard the clap of thunder, and that is all he remembers. It had not started raining at that point. Most golfers stop playing and head for cover when there is thunder and lightning around, so that they do not get wet or struck by lightning.
Hollywood, much to the difference of that.
Well, right. I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I've been in torrential downpours where it's pouring rain and there is very big bolts of lightning right in the middle of it. It's common in Arizona.
I did not say that it does not happen. What I said was that often the lightning is around the edges of the storm. Occasionally, you will get static charges that build up within the center of the storm. Now, the clouds are all connected together, and often It will be fed to the edges of the storm, away from the water. Occasionally, you will get lightning, but for every 100 thunderstorms on your planet, you will get one where lightning is unusual. But the vast majority of lightning strikes are around the edges of storms or gaps in the clouds.
Yeah, you must be caught in that gap there.
Yeah. I don't know what it was.
So the next time you have a thunderstorm, I believe your season is over.
Yeah.
Look out and watch the thunderstorm. You will see that the lightning does not actually happen in the center of the storm. It is more of the edges of the storm. This happens because of the rain is coming down. It's carrying the charges out of the clouds so that it cannot build up in the center where the downpour is. More to the outsides and gaps where there is not so much rain, it can build up and therefore it has to be discharged. Often lightning will jump from one cloud to another. That is because the positive and negative charges are creating the activity.
Okay.
Now, dealing with the divas, sometimes the divas feed off of this energy to increase their mysterious nature. In your popular culture, it is common to watch a thing on people of other religions celebrating their masses, and there is thunderstorms and wind and rain and lightning. This is based partly in truth. The fact that divas will do this for their entertainment. Your Native Americans have their rain dance. It is a mutually beneficial setup for the divas and the natives of this continent.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the diva that is worshipped by the Native Americans concerning thunder and rain. Or at least thunder. There is one. I can't remember its name.
It's different.
They see it as a god, just like the Nordic folk did.
Mm-hmm. It is the divas interacting in a particular way.
Oh, okay. Infecting physical universe.
Correct. This is manipulation of molecules of water and energy in a particular way that benefits the people. They are happy. So the divas return a compliment for leaving an area alone or improving an area or whatever. They're given the gift that they most desire by using manipulation. It may not be one diva. Frequently, it is more than one diva. Some divas will work with an individual. Some divas will work with a group of individuals. Some groups of divas will work with groups of individuals or individuals. It depends on what the divas desire and what the people desire and how that beneficial arrangement can be achieved.
Now, here's a $64 question. Is there an Earth Diva?
The deity that was mentioned was Fricka.
Well,
the goddess of the air, the mother goddess.
That's, yes.
In reference to Wagner.
I see. It wasn't exactly what I was thinking of as far as Earth Diva goes, but that's okay.
That is an Earth Diva. Gaia is another name.
Two different names for the same diva?
Not necessarily the same diva, but the same family of divas.
Okay.
Well, that's why. They're just mental.
If I had said Gaia, you would have understood. Yeah. As I said Fricka, you did not.
Right.
But it is the same diva. The same group of divas. On that note, live long, prosper, and I'll be back.
Later, dude. Later.